Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Sai Prakash. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashanthinilam, the most happening place on the planet. And today is October 16th, 2014. And in a few days from now, we would be celebrating all the Sai centers world over would be observing a very significant day in the Prashanthinilam festival calendar. In fact, the day when divinity declared, decided to part the wheel and let mankind know who he truly is. So that we know, so that we can ensure that we do not squander away this priceless opportunity. In fact, I remember way back in 2002, on this day, October 20th, the Avatar Declaration Day, the Sai youth from Hyderabad had gathered at his lotus feet, and Swami, that morning, for more than 1.5 hours, diligently and generously narrated so many instances from his childhood, only so that the youth today can perhaps learn those lessons from all that the Lord went through as a little one. We know of how many trials and tortures Swami was put through when he was 12, 13 years, 14 years old. Everyone was confused and mystified with his behavior, and they were completely bewildered and flummoxed by what was happening. And they thought it was the handiwork of somebody who is inside Swami's body. It was some soul which was possessing Satyam's body, and so they tried various means of exorcising that foreign being away from Satya's physical frame. And as a result, Satya was put into tremendous trauma. But all the same, there were amazing moments of revelation also all along that period. The Lord actually never shies away from giving us the signs. But somehow man is always so blinded that he refuses to see those signs. And man, as a result, binds himself in knots with his own ignorance. One of the neighbors of Swami's brother, Seshma Raju, in Uruvakonda, was a person by name Kasibatla Shriram Murthy. And he was the one who was very much around when the supposed scorpion bite incident happened. That is the time when Satyam said that he was bitten by a scorpion and he started behaving differently. No one actually ever saw the scorpion, and nor was there any detection of any poison in Swami's body. But that was what Bhagwan said. And Mr. Shriram Murthy recalls how they had taken Satyam to a local doctor, and looking at young Satyam's unconscious state, how the doctor assured them that there was no danger to his life, and he prescribed some injections to be given in the night. And in fact, 4 injections were administered to Satyam that night, but there was no change in his condition. And after that, Mr. Shriram Murthy actually wanted to move Swami to a hospital. And until late that night, Satyam oscillated between consciousness and unconsciousness, and some of the neighbors suggested that a sacrificial offering to the village deity, Sankulamma, would help. And so, they immediately rushed to offer worship. Meanwhile, back at the house, Satyam now came out of his seemingly comatose state and he murmured, "The coconut has broken into 3 pieces. Of course, people around him could not understand what he was saying and what he meant. But those who had gone to the Sankulamma shrine returned with the amazing news that the coconut which they had offered at the temple had indeed broken into 3 parts. And all were flabbergasted. And at this moment, Satyam whispers to Mr. Murthy, "Do not worry. Sai Baba will take care." No one had heard Sai Baba, the word Sai Baba then. This is even before the declaration. But Swami was giving all those hints. In fact, it is at this time that Satyam's brother, Seshma Raju, thought that it is high time to communicate this strange condition of Satyam to their parents. And so Venkamma, Swami's sister, recounts how Seshma Raju at that time called a couple of high school students, explained to them the route to Puttaparthi and asked them to go there to fetch Satyam's parents. But while he was explaining this, Satyam told them that there was no need to send anybody because his parents were already on their way and were coming by a certain bus. And since there was no one who could recognize Satyam's parent, then Seshma Raju himself went to the location and brought his parents to Satyam. And once the parents arrived, they were aghast to see Satyam in that condition. To their utter shock, Satyam greeted them with an unstrained outpouring of Vedantic philosophy, and then suddenly he slumped down on the ground. And then the next moment he got up, and then Satyam said, "Call Narayan Shastri. He is misinterpreting the Bhagavatam. He has to be corrected." And somebody went to call the pandit who lived opposite Seshmaraju's house, and that messenger was amazed to see that the pandit actually was discoursing on the Bhagavatam. And Narayan Shastri, hearing this strange request, he was beside himself with rage. He growled, "What does he know about Hamsa Gita? How can that little brat talk about my lecture about Hamsa Gita?" And finally, it was Pedda Venkamaraju who personally went to Narayan Shastri's house and requested him to come, thinking that that would be a good opportunity to knock some sense into his son Satyam. And Narayan Shastri also thought that he should not let this opportunity go by. He thought that he should teach a lesson to that quote-unquote arrogant urchin. And what happened that day is, the moment this pandit came, Satyam began to expound the most complex passages from the Hamsa Gita, and he did it in the most simple and lucid language. And Narayan Shastri was not only humbled, he was overwhelmed. The scholar in him knew that he was indeed in the presence of someone extraordinary. He actually prostrated before Satyam and begged forgiveness. But all this was beyond the comprehension of the ordinary, simple-minded folk around Satyam at that time. And in fact, the physicians of Urupakonda brought the district medical officer from Anandpur who happened to be camping locally. And that person said that Satyam had an attack of hysteria and he gave some medicines. But even this was not enough for the relatives of Satyam, and because Swami's condition was the same, now they thought that they have to take him to a tantric, a worshipper of the mother. In fact, it is said that when a tantric appeared in front of young Satyam, Satyam actually commanded him to offer worship and leave the place. Swami asserted, "I am everything in everything. You cannot do anything. Just go." And that person just disappeared from the scene. And apparently on the way out, he told Seshmaraju Garu, "No planet or spirit has harmed this boy. He is steeped in divinity. This is Daiva Maya, divine illusion. This is not a Bhuta, this is not a ghost." But somehow, in spite of this, Seshmaraju Garu looked the other way and he summoned an exorcist who declared that an evil spirit possessed the boy. And even that person did not dare touch the boy, and he quietly made good his escape. And then the desperate parents brought Satyam to Puttaparthi for further treatment, quote unquote. And another exorcist was summoned, and this person got down to his job by preparing a long list of articles required for that rite, for that exorcism. And young Satyam, who was overhearing his requirements, pointed out that the exorcist had overlooked a few items and few details, and when the exorcist heard that, he was dumbfounded and he left. Even though all this happened, there were many instances when Satyam was indeed subjected to a lot of physical hardship in the ensuing months. His head was tonsured several times. There was this Kumara Kondappa at Buchiyara Garipalli who treated him with herbal potions. And in Brahmanapalli, his head was tonsured and citric juices were poured on it in order to remove what was thought to be an evil spirit. And then came the one at Kadri, Muppur Appaiya Swami. And the boy was now left with this Appaiya Swami for treatment. And to begin with, Chinnagurappa, a barber of the neighboring village, removed all the hair from Bhagwan's head. And then the hands of Satyam were tied and he was fastened to a stone pillar. And then Appaiya Swami made 4 deep X marks on his head with a knife. And after this, Appaiya Swami took the boy to a nearby place called Bhoga, where a stream of water flows all the time and collects in a small well. Satyam was now made to sit on the lowest step, and 101 pots of cold water were picked up and poured on his head from above. And then this exorcist, Appaya Swami, he made X marks on Bhagwan's head and he smeared it with a terribly pungent paste made of pepper powder, lemon juice and garlic, and he rubbed that vigorously. And on top of this was rubbed turmeric powder mixed with amundan oil. And then Appaya Swami brought Satyam to his home, but he did not end there. And now Satyam was made to stand for 1.5 hours neck deep in a pit into which buffalo dung and boiled neem leaves were poured. And after this, Satyam was given a bath and made to lie down, but it did not stop even here. He was now covered with thick blankets until he sweated, and then collyrium was applied to his eyes, and because of this, Swami's eyes and face became swollen. The ghastly treatment continued. A thin iron rod was then heated to redness, and the boy was branded with 3 marks behind his neck, 2 on his each leg and 2 on his each of his hands. That is how the whole encounter went on. This visit to this doctor lasted for 2 days. In fact, seeing the swollen face of Bhagwan, Swami's sister Venkamma was so distressed that she removed her only earrings and gave it to this exorcist just so that Satyam can be extricated from that ordeal. And after that, Satyam himself told his relatives to prepare a certain remedy which, when applied, reduced the swelling on his eyes and his face. When I read these accounts and I remember the occasions when Bhagwan used to narrate these episodes from his childhood, I cannot help but think, why did Swami allow all this? I mean, it is his story. He could have scripted it in any other way if he wanted. But why did he allow so much of torture on his physical frame? Why did someone have to torture his head and make cuts in his knife, deep cuts with knife on his forehead? In fact, I remember when there used to be heavy breeze in Kodaikanal and Bhagwan's hair used to part, even we could always notice those marks on his head. Why did the Lord put himself to such traumatic circumstances? In fact, years later, when devotees asked Swami why he had to undergo so much suffering, and that too in complete silence, with no protest, Swami said, "People then were not prepared to know me. Besides, I wanted to teach humanity the noble ideals of patience, acceptance and love, and put before others a good example." Of course, by and by, I also had to tell them who I am. But when I read this, this is what struck me. Swami said, "I wanted to teach humanity the noble ideals of patience, acceptance and love." Swami narrated his entire life story to the youth of Hyderabad because he wanted the youth to learn these virtues. He had undergone everything in his life just so that we also be inspired to practice these virtues. Every youth needs these virtues, patience, acceptance and love. And I feel all the answers to the hundreds of questions that the youth have today about life, about living, about how to manage with so many challenges. All those answers are there in these three words. And last Thursday, if you were with us in this program, you would recall that we were having this discussion with three former students and a young doctor from the General Hospital who had the chance to visit the Uttar Kannada district of the state of Karnataka, where they had the opportunity to interact with over 1,000 students in different colleges, students pursuing their bachelor's program and master's program. And they had this unique opportunity to present Bhagwan's message to them, but in a language and in a format that they can relate to. And it was for them a very, very ennobling experience, very enriching experience. Last Thursday, each of them shared about what was their takeaway from this whole experience. But what they could not share was what were those questions that these students from different colleges wanted to be addressed, and what is it that they could guide in the background of what they have learned from Bhagwan. Satyam Vada Dharmam Chara is the motto of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, but it is easier said than done. It is very challenging in practical life trying to follow these principles of truth, righteousness, and especially in today's times, the youth have so much of distractions, so much of challenges in terms of trying to maintain their focus in life and how to balance everything and move towards your goal with clarity in your mind and peace in your heart. So they had this chance to interact with, as I said, hundreds of young minds, and I requested them the last session itself to continue that and share with us what they could tell these youth. So that is what we will be doing today. And the preamble that I gave to this program, I thought, is so apt, because Bhagwan used to give his entire youth. If you see, we derive every solution to every question that the youth have. If you look at Bhagwan's life, you would find the answer. And this is the time to look at Bhagwan's life, to look at Bhagwan's childhood and Bhagwan's those teenage years. So we will listen to all three or four of them as we move on in this program, in this last segment of Thursday Live. You are listening live from straight from the studio of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is 8:55, and welcome to Inspired Hearts, Empowered Future. That was the theme of the workshops that these three former students and a young doctor from the General Hospital conducted over 3-4 days in the three towns of the Uttar Kannada district of the state of Karnataka, and they shared about all those details last week. So welcome, brothers Harishankar, K.M. Ganesh, Rajbhushan and Dr. Prashant. Welcome once again. I'm really very happy that we are meeting. To continue what we left off last week, you shared about how was the experience of being there and sharing the different packages that you had created for all the students in different colleges. But as I mentioned, I really was looking forward to the question answer session that you had with these young minds. And I think that is something that everyone will benefit from. And so we actually started off last week with one question, isn't it, Harishankar?
Yes, and I think we'd be doing viewers a little bit of, listeners a little bit of service by recapping what the discussion was about and how this discussion actually came up.
Yeah, sure. Please go ahead.
So, this happened September 15th, 16th, 17th, last month that is. So, this was workshops that were conducted at the invitation of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organizations, Karnataka, by K.M. Ganesh, Raj Bhushan, Dr. Prashant and myself, Harishankar. And the workshop was entitled Inspired Hearts and Empowered Future. And it had essentially three modules. We dealt with Swami's precepts of unity of thought, word and deed, and Swami's, what he emphasizes, that we should have a relationship, good relationship with our parents.
Yes.
In the first module. And the second module consisted of what exactly is transformation, and presented by Dr. Prashant. And he titled it as a journey from the mind to the heart.
Yes.
Using the vehicle called discrimination, Viveka.
Buddhi.
And K.M. Ganesh, he dealt with very essential concepts of goal setting and time management, which are very useful to the students. So this was what the presentations were about. These are held over 3 days. So during the course of these presentations, and especially in one particular school, the St. Joseph School in Karwar, we had a very bubbling and energetic audience of students, and we had so many questions that came, you know, we had slotted only half an hour for the question and answer session, but the literally a torrent of questions, so we could deal with so few, and we decided that we'll deal with the questions later once we came back, and this is what we are looking at. Of the many, so many different questions that were asked, we are dealing with some of them in this session too.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Very interestingly, Bishu, right now the people from, devotees from the Uttar Kannada district, from Karwar, Sissi, Honnavar and other places there.
These are the districts, right? Karwar,
yes.
Sissi.
This is one district called Uttar Kannada.
Yeah.
And these are the towns in that particular district.
Sissi, Honnavar
and Karwar. Karwar is the district headquarters of Uttar Kannada district.
Yeah.
So we've got devotees who have come now to Prashanti Nilam.
Yes, I just heard about Yatra. That. Yes,
yes, and I think Raj Bhushan should do the honors because he himself is from Karwar. He'll tell us what.
Yeah,
this,
tell us Raj Bhushan about
what they're all about.
This about this Prati Yatra.
Actually, when we are thinking of this workshop, simultaneously the district president, that is Mr. Patharpekar, was also coordinating for this Prati program, and he had thought of around like 1,500 people. Like, he had just planned 1,500 people. So he was thinking he has to arrange buses from Karwar to
as an annual Prati Yatra.
Yes, annual Prati Yatra. So he went to the KSRTC and said that, see, sir, we require around 6 buses so that we can arrange a trip from Karwar to Puttaparthi. So interestingly, the KSRTC, the manager, was a Balvika student.
Oh,
but Mr. Patharpekar did not know this.
Yeah, he didn't know this, and he said that, sir, I was a Balvika student, and then he said, sir, you are going to Puttaparthi, then you should take buses number like multiples of 9. It should be 9 or 1+8 or 27. So he said, see, those many people may not be there. So, but he was thinking, okay, let us see how it comes. So they had decided actually 1,500. You know, finally, I just met him today.
Okay.
He was telling me the number is around 2,500.
Oh, wow.
And the buses are 45. That is 4 plus 5, 9.
Fantastic. 45 buses.
45 buses.
And how many hours does it take to come from
Calgary? Around 14 hours.
14 hours.
14 hours.
Wow. 14 hours, 45 buses, 2,500 people from Karwar for a 3-day Prati Yatra?
And they're presenting a program on coming 18th.
Wow. That is again 9. 1 plus 8. Fantastic.
So they're presenting about 10 different dances taken from various aspects of mythology and incorporating some of the traditional dances from that area.
And you should ask listeners to look forward to that program and watch it live on Radio Sai website. So yes, Sari, let's go back to our questions.
Yes. So when we looked at all the questions, of course, we should remember that these were questions that were raised by youth, teenagers, and some of them were very specific, you know, to that age group.
Yes.
And when we were looking over all the questions, like, we could summarize majority of the questions into 3 basic categories. So one of the main doubts that many of the students had is how to develop self-confidence, which is something that we covered in the segment last week.
In some detail. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other two questions, which were a lot of concern to the students, they had to deal with how to develop concentration.
Mm-hmm.
And an allied question to that would be how to avoid distractions.
Yes.
Right? And many of them ask questions regarding how do you manage anger, how do you manage different negative feelings that come up in teenagers, I think with that hormone, you know, surge. That they have, surge of hormones, I think they're always subject to such things. And these are some of the very, you know, pertinent questions that they asked, and I think we can deal with them today and look at the other questions.
But I think, I guess, if you have these are the broad headings, isn't it, Hari? I think you would have faced so many questions which fall under this broad umbrella.
Absolutely, yes. So, like just as I said, so the last time when we took up confidence, they had asked many questions like, how do I get over shyness? How do I get over nervousness? And very specifically, how do I develop self-confidence? So, we kind of, last time we clubbed all these questions under the broad heading confidence, and we dealt with it in some detail to address as many aspects of this question as possible.
Yeah. Okay.
And, so today, I think we'll take up this question of concentration. So, something very pertinent to students, something that really motivates them.
So because it could be questions like I'm not able to concentrate while studying, I'm not able to give attention to a particular task for more than a particular period of time, or that I'm getting very distracted with so many things that is happening on my gadget, on the TV, or whatever, or around my life. Is that the kind of question, specific question that you got?
So, as I said, the allied question would be how to avoid distractions. So, specifically, with respect to concentration, see, why is it so relevant to them? See, many of them, in fact, this particular age group would ask the questions, they're pretty much in the, few months away from writing their many entrance examinations for professional courses, like their engineering or their medical. So it's one time in their life when they're really going to think like, how can I get the best out of these 6 months? And
correct.
One powerful tool for that would be concentration. So,
so Ganesh, what did we try to guide them? How did you want to, at least from your perspective, what did you share with them?
Well, talking about concentration, I recollect my childhood days, and I'm sure all of us would have had this particular experience. Suppose I'm watching my favorite cartoon serial, and then my mother calls me from kitchen. She's been calling me. I remember this particular incident where she called me several times. She said that she called me several times. But I was so absorbed in that cartoon network that my mother had to literally come to me and shake me up. I'm calling you from last 5 minutes. Why are you not responding? I looked at her with a blank expression. Did you really call me?
Mm-hmm.
Because she's not calling me from some very far distance. Just she's in the next room.
Yes.
So that is one experience. Or, for example, I remember reading some books. I was so absorbed in reading the book that my friend is sitting right maybe next to me and he's calling me Ganesh, and really I didn't hear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is concentration. I think where you know your mind is so absorbed in something that. As there's a popular saying that it is not the mind that sees, it is not the ear that hears. It is the mind that sees through your eyes. It is the mind that hears through your ears. So it is basically the mind. So you are where your mind is. So the good news is all of us at some point or the other in our lives, we have experienced what concentration is. And one of the first thing probably, which I would say as a chemist, as a litmus test of a concentration is, you lose the sense of time. You know, you forget the sense of time because you're so absorbed. For example, there are some movies or some, satsangs that I've attended where suddenly you see, it's already 2 hours that we have spent. You know, you're so absorbed in that particular event that you lost the sense of time. And this is probably one of the, if somebody were to ask, what exactly is concentration? There are many ways of explaining what concentration is.
Absolutely.
But this one particular thing is, suppose for example, during this particular satsang that is going on right now, if you have already looked at your watch 10 times, you are not concentrating. Okay.
Yeah.
Again, some people say, we cannot concentrate on everything because the challenge that the students face is that they do not like the subject probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So how do we concentrate on those topics and those events which we do not have an inherent inclination towards? Now that is what we need to discuss, and that is what the real problem is.
Exactly.
So
the very basic, you know, if people were to ask us how do we develop concentration, you can talk to them about the techniques that people adopt normally to develop concentration. So actually in our sacred text, the Hatha Yoga, they do talk about this practice called Trataka.
Trataka.
Where one of the ways of achieving it, which I think Swami also has spoken about in discourses, is like you have a candle flame about a meter in front of you. And so you develop this ability to look at the flame, to keep looking at the flame for, you know, periods like a minute or 2 minutes. And of course, you should be very aware that the flame should be kept a meter away.
Yes.
From you, so it's not hurt your eyes really. But you develop this ability to concentrate by using this practice. It's a time-tested technique. In fact, it is often used by hypnotists to develop this ability within themselves.
Here, just one small word of caution is, many people say, I meditate for half an hour, we meditate for 1 hour. The fact that you're conscious that you're meditating yes. for half an hour or 1 hour or 10 hours is surely, proves that you're not meditating. Absolutely. Because all the time you're thinking of the time. You're always looking at the watch.
How long you've done that.
The moment, the true meditation happens when you actually got absorbed into the so-called meditation phenomena, that you lost the sense of time. That's
But the beginner steps would be, you know, you start with like 2 minutes at a time and then keep extending by minutes, so as to develop this ability to keep your mind fixed on one particular thing. And the very next step would be to imagine that flame is either in your heart or it is concentrated between your eyebrows, and then to focus on that area. So this is the technique that is taught in order to develop concentration. So as a first step, this is something that you can, you know, adopt in order to really develop your powers of concentration. So
on the lines of Jyoti meditation.
On the lines of Jyoti meditation, yes.
There's actually one more time-tested method. Mm. That is, it has been scientifically proved that there's a direct correlation between the rate of your breath and the frequency of your thought.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, we know that when we get tensed up, when we're in the state of fear, we start breathing very heavily. The good news is it also works out the reverse way. If you consciously breathe slowly, okay, automatically the frequency, the number of thoughts per minute, if I were to define, reduces gradually. So this is one way of, the first step towards concentration is you have to reduce that,
agitation
and bundle of thoughts which goes out of.
Fantastic.
So there is a direct, immediate step that you can take in hand is, physiologically, that is consciously, you can take control over your breath, which all of us can do it, irrespective of whatever age is. Breathe, sit silently, breathe slowly, and gradually you'll see that the number of thoughts that are going through your head reduces gradually. And it is a perfect ambience of focusing on something that you want to focus. Even if it is not a topic of your interest, that is probably the first step. Yes. What happens, we come with an agitated state of mind and we want to concentrate and grasp something which we are already not interested. So the first thing is to clear your mind.
Yeah.
And we can start straight away by breathing slowly, consciously. This is a very immediate.
It's a very important point.
Yeah. Because in our common conversations also, and when you find someone a bit agitated, we say, okay, take a deep breath.
First thing is to say, take a few deep breaths. Absolutely.
Breath has a very direct correlation with your thought process. Mm.
In fact, I did forget to mention that a very integral part of this Trataka practice is to regulate your breathing. Mm. The very first thing, even before you start the practice of looking at the flame, first you have to regulate your breathing. That's a very important point that he brought up. And in fact, like just to go back to what you were saying, see, sometimes when the students are talking about lack of concentration, it is the actual issue will be quite something else.
Mm-hmm.
And what K.M. Ganesh mentioned right at the beginning is that it's not that you do not have the power of concentration.
Because
you can
concentrate on a movie.
You can. You can. Like, if you take up any hobby, you're a good painter, or you're good at sketching, or you're good at sports, you'll notice that you actually have the power to bear your mind entirely on the subject at hand. That power is available with most of the people.
Yes.
And there are very few, there are actually disorders of the mind where people do find it difficult and they have to manage it medically. But I'm talking about the average person, he has this ability to bear his mind, focus his mind on something that is important. Now that is where the students actually face a problem. When they're saying that we are not able to concentrate, what they're actually saying is that they perhaps feel stressed out by having to sit for that study session.
And it's like if you do not like a particular thing or if it does not appeal to you, you know, a lecture, even that 5 minutes will seem like 5 hours.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
that is Einstein's theory of relativity, he very clearly describes it.
Just getting back to this now, what is what it means to say is, now again, when you say they don't like the subject, there are like so many reasons. So what we would advise many students is actually to sit down and get to the bottom of the issue. What is it that really has you get distracted? Now there's a bit of we have to understand how the brain handles such situations. Notice that whenever you are stressed, the brain will tell you to do some things like go to sleep, or to de-stress, go listen to some music, or talk to your friends. So what is actually happening is when you're sitting down to study, there is this element of stress, which is why the brain tells you, how.
Now, why is it a stress? It's not physical stress.
It's not physical stress. That's the thing. Now we have to get to that. Why are you stressed? Actually, I had this opportunity out of the workshop time. It was during the lunch time, and one student, she came up to me and asked me this question. I'm not able to concentrate. And so I had the time to engage in a conversation with her. And because of this, I could get to really what the issue at hand was. In her case, it was just that she felt she could not do well in that particular subject.
Mm-hmm.
And so the effort that she was looking at, like I need to sit for 1 hour and study, it was already in her mind that 1 hour is a complete waste. Nothing is going to penetrate into my mind.
Hmm.
Or in some cases, it would be like the last time I wrote this exam, I scored very low marks, and exactly the same thing is going to repeat.
So you're already sort of resigned to the fact that this is not...
This is how it's going to turn out, no matter what I do.
Hmm.
So that is certainly one thing that causes a little bit of stress.
Here one more, I would say, a very important insight, which all of us, dear listeners, if I were to say... The first listener is me, myself. Okay. It's not a revelation, but it's a confession of Duryodhana during Mahabharata. He says that, Janami dharmascha nachame pravritti. Janami adharmascha nachame nivritti. Now it's a very, very powerful message and a very honest confession which all of us go through. What is that? I know what is good. I know what is right. But I don't have the inclination to do it. I know what is bad. I know what is adharma, but I don't have. I am not able to stop myself from doing what. And I know what I am not supposed to be doing. So this is a very common predicament. And like somebody told very nicely, there are two basic type of tragedies which is there in everybody's life. One is a major tragedy which comes and hit. It can be a health. Some dear one has gone, has died or is having a very, very bad ailment, life-threatening ailment, or there's a heavy financial loss. Examples can be multiplied, and wherein we feel that this is the end of the road. I mean, we are doomed. That is, including the natural disasters which happens. They are major tragedies which we see day to day. But one more very subtle and gradual tragedy which happens in every individual's life is what Duryodhana confessed, I know what is right, but I don't have the inclination to do. I know what is wrong, but I'm not able to stop myself. And this tragedy, the silent tragedy which happens in every individual's life, eventually sets pathway for the major tragedy which is going to hit him.
Correct.
Okay. So now the question is, how do we work on this particular predicament? It's if I am saying, honestly speaking, if I know that if I have to study for my examination, I have to be honest in my dealings with everybody, so that there's no question of getting caught. Okay. All of us know that, but still people do mistakes, or still people don't have the inclination of doing what is right. It's because somewhere they are overpowered.
Yes.
By certain tendencies.
Absolutely.
Now, there is no shortcuts. There is absolutely no shortcuts.
No shortcuts.
As Swami told one devotee, that sadhana is simple, but it is not easy. Now, one may wonder, what is the difference between simple and easy? Well, Swami explains, simple is something which is doable. Okay. And easy is something which you don't have to put an effort. It happens naturally. But sadhana is something which you need to put effort. It is simple, but it is not easy. So the good news is, because it is simple, it is doable. But if you don't put effort, like for example, there's a glass in front of me. If I don't make an effort to lift it, thousands of years may go, okay, to put it literally, it may not. The effort is very important. So the right and the constructive question would be, what is the effort, what type of effort we have to put, and how consistently and how intensely we have to put.
Yes.
It's a combination of persistence and intensity which helps us to become successful in life. So this is,
it can start in small way.
Yeah.
You have to take those first steps.
First baby steps, we call as baby steps.
Absolutely.
Towards that direction.
I mean, you have to start with running 1 kilometer, 2 kilometer, 5 kilometer before you can run a 20
marathon.
Kilometer. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, marathon.
No, but one way is actually, recognizing how this happens. You know, once we have a grip on the mechanism of what is it that has you, that not being able to concentrate. As I was saying, if you go down one level, if you bear down on what is really happening, it is the issue called stress. You're stressed out by the fact that you have to study and your brain is now trying to find different ways to cope with that. Now, as you said, what's the next question? Why does this stress arise? We identified various reasons. Past, bad performance. In one case, really, which I found out was that the student did not have a very good working relationship with the teacher.
Okay.
It often happens, yes. And believe me, when it comes to mathematics, one of the best ways to have the students lose their fear of math is to find a teacher who is very friendly. This can work for any subject, but I found most people fear mathematics because sometimes they find the teacher very forbidding.
Or very digital.
Yeah. Yeah. It just takes, and I have had this work in one case, like one very close relative of mine, his son went through this very process. So the only insight that I could give was this: look for a teacher, a tutor who is friendly. And that actually worked. The guy was getting around 80% in mathematics, and luckily in his 10th class ICSE exams, he passed with 95%.
Wow.
Yeah. So it just takes, at that age, these are factors which we may not be able to appreciate. We are adults. It is very easy to cope with many of those emotions. But down at that level, level of the teenager, there are so many emotions that are colliding that they are absolutely not able to identify.
In fact, I remember how so many of my classmates, they decided to do their majors in physics after their 11th and 12th in sciences,
right?
Because of the teacher who taught them physics in their 11th and 12th.
Uh-huh. Yes, absolutely. It's completely swayed by such emotions and have nothing to do with their abilities, really nothing to do with their abilities. And that's why, one suggestion that finally I could give the student at that time was like, when you sit down to study, let's say you're giving yourself, as he was talking about goal setting, you set yourself a goal that for the next 1 hour, I'm going to take up this particular subject. Let's say something difficult like trigonometry, right? And you're given yourself like an hour to study that. Now, I suggest that when you sit down, take just 2 minutes to really have all these thoughts settled down, like notice the different kind of thoughts that you're having about the subject itself.
Yes.
Just remember, the author has never written trigonometry with the intention of torturing you or making your life difficult. Right? And in fact, the author himself enjoys trigonometry a lot.
Then it could have been trichnometry. Yes.
And so that is the first thing, is notice all those thoughts, very different kind of thoughts. And once you've done that, you have a grip over what is happening. And this is your window of opportunity. Now you can actually set the tone for the next 1 hour, how it goes.
If I were to play a devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
In today's competitive world.
Right.
More often than not, what students face is the syllabus. If you see the size of the books, they can, each book is like a pillow.
Got it.
Okay. Especially the transition from 10th standard to 11th standard.
Hmm.
The syllabus that they have to cover, the competitive exams, meaning the thousands of students are competing. And also, during the exam, you have got maybe 60 minutes or 120 minutes to, cover all the questions.
Yeah.
By design, it is a stressful situation.
Got it.
So, and it is like, you do or die, as in research we say, you publish or perish.
Hmm.
So at that level, if you're not performing, you're out.
Right.
Okay. So With all those uncertainties, it is but natural to have anxiety. And especially, for example, if you are sitting with some mathematical problem, some problem, and it is, you know, it's like 2-3 hours have gone and you have hardly crossed 1 or 2 pages. And you know that you have to cover, you know, a whole lot of syllabus. Maybe next week you have to give the exam. It's natural, like, the example that is coming in my mind right now is what happened to Arjuna in the battlefield. See, Arjuna, before the battlefield, even the battle of Kurukshetra, he tells Krishna, Krishna, I take me to the center of the battlefield. I want to see who are those opponents who are ready to come and fight with me. And we all know that Arjuna, being Arjuna, the great warrior of that time, he very well knew that on the other side, Bhishma is there, Dronacharya is there. It is not that he did not know. But when he went, this is one of the interpretations of one of the commentaries of Bhagavad Gita. So, it gives a very powerful insight. What happened in the middle of the battlefield was, when he went right in the middle of the battlefield and when he looked at the Kaurava formation, the next moment when he looked back, when he looked at the Pandava formation, which was 7 Akshavini, and Akshavini is again a unit of number of cavalry they have, and Kauravas having 11 Akshavini, it was like literally like an eagle sitting right in front of a sparrow. So at that moment, what hit him the hardest was an imminent defeat, because the magnitude of the challenge was so huge. The first thing that we do is, if he had computer, he would have pressed the escape button. Okay, that's what he wanted. He started giving, the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita is nothing but excuse why he shouldn't. Now the question is, the same Arjuna, 100 meter behind or 200, whatever it is, was grinding his teeth and wanted to fight. What happened in the middle of the field? Right in the middle of the field, he realized that victory was impossible. And all the while he was, you know, he was saying that, he was feeling that he is the champion, he is the hero, he is the cause of he is fighting for the cause of Dharma, and that he is the one who is going to do. And this again is a very powerful lesson for all of us. If we assume too much of doership, okay, then when the challenges which will be imposed on us will be so huge that our ego will get crushed. And that's what happened to Arjuna at that point. And luckily for him, like Brother Hari was saying, if you have a good teacher, if you have a good mentor with you at that point of time, Krishna was the right mentor, right teacher. Okay. At that, and because of Krishna, he was able to fight the battle and win. Okay. So the question that I'm asking here is, all the students, you know, when they look at the syllabus, when they look at the timeline they have, the impossible, they feel like Arjuna, you know. And
it's like Kurukshetra
war, literally, and they want to run away. And they know they cannot run away. Okay. Yeah. So they are, and the more they, this is a very popular term, procrastination, postponing basically. You sit in front of the book, you open the book, you try to solve 1 or 2 problems, you see that you're not able to, you close the book, you either sleep or you do go and watch TV or something. And as the exam comes nearby, you feel it is gone, it is all gone, and literally that was the scenario of 90% of the students in today's competitive world. So the question is, how do we deal with that challenges?
Yeah. See, the point that we made a little earlier, that pretty much the abilities are there with everyone.
Yes.
Right? So now your question is like, having, when you're faced with such a situation, even what you talked about Arjuna, Swami gives us a beautiful access to managing such situations. So one of the things that Swami says, this has to deal with liberation, but I can actually adapt it to this particular situation. Swami says, mana eva manushanam karanam bandha mokshayo. So Swami says that whether it is your, when you're talking about bondage or liberation, it is completely in your mind. The idea of that you're in bondage is in your mind. That the idea that you are liberated is also in your mind. Now the takeaway from that, if we want to adapt it for the situation at hand, is that whatever your description of the situation that is in front of you, 100 meters behind, Arjuna is standing looking at that army, and for him, the whole, if he is asked to describe about war, he says winnable. Now, a few meters down, when he actually looks at the specifics,
and he compares,
the army that he has and the kind of stalwarts who are there at with Duryodhana, his mind now says it is not winnable anymore. And notice that any time it is not known, as we know, the way it turned out is that Arjuna actually managed to win. The Pandavas managed to win the war. And this is what many of us tend to do. See, it is completely the story that is created by the mind at that particular moment. Yeah. This is what we have to recognize. And Swami says that mind is a bundle of thoughts. Let us not assume that the mind is... He gives such a beautiful, simple definition, you know. It gives us so much ability to handle situations. That mind is nothing but the bundle of thoughts. And these are the thoughts that are there in your head. And just as you were saying, looking at a very vast subject, so the person who is not stressed out, who is able to manage that particular, the thoughts that are there in his head, one of the things he will do is to set a timetable, break it up into small, small portions, very portions that he can deal with. And take it, you know, one day at a time, as we call it.
Yes.
Right? So that is definitely the way to deal with it. There's absolutely no way of, you know, you are at the exam and you're not prepared before, there's nothing that can help you. But when you actually are prepared enough, and how do you deal with that? See, we have to break this down into small, small portions that we study. But the problem here comes that even when I sit down, I have set down a schedule, you know. Mm-hmm. Even when I have set down a schedule, most of us notice this, that we sit down to do something, at that moment our mind suggests a whole lot of other options.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can look at my tablet and play Candy Crush Saga, or I can look at the internet and, you know, read about somebody and host of distractions. Exactly.
Okay, I don't want.
Yeah. And that is why, you know, so what we are saying is, it's what is happening is in the mind. So the first 2 minutes as you sit down, just take time to observe all those thoughts that are running, the different kind of thoughts that are running at that moment. It could be things like, I hate this, or I hate the teacher, or I cannot do well. You know, many of those students already have this idea. So now the next step is this, you know, which works very beautifully. Now supposing Ganesh, I say that now you have to study trigonometry. Okay, the chapter of trigonometry is just in front of you. How would you feel at this moment? It looks very
funny,
imposing. Yeah.
Yeah, obviously. Suddenly, if it comes like that,
absolutely.
Right now, no, but again, even the students who are motivated, for example, they know this is. For me, trigonometry may not mean a lot, but...
Yeah, I'm talking about the average student.
Average student.
So the student looks at these trigonometry chapter and he's totally psyched about it, like, for example.
He hates it,
or at that moment it looks something which is difficult, like how Arjuna looks at the
army.
The thing to bear in mind is, you have no idea how it turns out an hour from now.
Later, yeah.
Yeah, we have absolutely no idea how it turns an hour from now.
So we should not stick on to a preconceived notion and...
Yeah, just notice that you have a thought that says, I will not be able to finish it. So, and, as I said, the moment you have this grip over what are the different thoughts that you have about that subject, is when you have that window of opportunity to insert another thought. And that thought is, it's a very easy thing. Just imagine, 1 hour from now, you have actually completed this chapter. You have actually understood this chapter. Let's say, how will you feel about that?
Very good.
Yeah. So the thing is, the moment you are able to now move into that, you know. Mm. So the easiest step, very recommended exercise this is to write down at that moment, just write down, at the end of 1 hour, I am more skilled and more confident in trigonometry. It's just that you're playing a trick with your mind.
It's just that you're playing a trick with your mind.
Yeah, yeah. Because as Swami said, Swami, your mind is what? A bundle of thoughts.
Absolutely.
And the moment you insert this particular thought, that at that moment you notice immediately all that stress has disappeared.
I start feeling good actually. You know?
Yeah, absolutely good. Yeah. And so the one barrier that you had just to take that first step to start reading what is there, that has gone.
Absolutely. I mean,
it is like throwing your hat into the fence. The moment you do that, you take the first step, you started walking. That's all it takes.
And once you feel good about it, I think it'll be, even if you're not so brilliant, but I think the job will become half less difficult.
Exactly.
I can actually share an experience in this.
Bishu, you can compare, you know, like you write so many articles for Radio Sai, right? You have the material with you. At the moment when you start writing, just at that moment, you can just think of the various thoughts that come in your head. Will this turn out to be a good article? Mm-hmm. Right? Will I be able to do justice to this particular subject? Mm-hmm. All those thoughts, they come to you.
Yeah.
But what do you normally do? You just start writing, isn't it? You just start writing. It's like throwing that hat into the...
Yeah. There are 2-3 perspectives here, Hari, which I wanted to share.
Right.
I know Ganesh also wants to add something, his personal experience, and I'm eager to hear that also. But... one thing is, what you mentioned just now, is to first tell yourself that at the end of 1 hour, I would have understood.
I have.
At the end of 1 hour, I have already understood it.
Yeah.
In fact, that's what I do many times.
Very good.
For any presentation, you know. Now, the moment I have to do something like that, the first thing I tell myself is, I'm rocking. It is going to be great.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. So it is going to be great. So that is a given.
Yes.
So after that, you know, it's a question of only making it happen.
Hmm.
So because we have already told ourselves that this is how it's going to be. So that puts a lot of confidence. You know, I always almost start imagining that, you know, the whole thing has happened.
Great.
And it's a question of only now, you know, going through the process.
Yes.
The whole thing has already happened.
Yes.
The movie is already shot. Okay. That is one which definitely helps.
Beautiful. Yeah.
And the second thing is, just like you mentioned about this Jyoti meditation, or, you know, focusing on the light and quietening your thoughts, taking a deep breath. I think on those lines, even sitting down and chanting a particular mantra for couple of minutes, you know, it could be Gayatri mantra, it could be any mantra, it could be just Om Shri Sai Ram also.
Mm.
But I think just sitting down and, you know, not doing anything else and just concentrating probably on your breath, if you cannot just go to a state where, you know, you can silence all your thoughts, at least what you can do, you can just concentrate only on your breath. Because, you know, initially it would be very difficult for you not to have any thoughts. I think it's very difficult to reach that state. Amanaskam is very difficult. But what is possible is, you know, you can probably focus on one or two thoughts. You know, you can probably focus on just Swami's form, or you can focus on just the breath.
Yeah.
And that way, you know, you quieten your mind completely. So that definitely helps in improving concentration. As you know, I mean, scientifically, the Gayatri Mantra is proven to improve one's IQ. And we know in South India how it's a tradition. And thanks to our rishis that, you know, they have made it a part of our daily sadhana, daily ritual. I mean, if you are someone who is endowed with that sacred thread, you are actually mandated to do that.
Yes.
And, you know, and that way actually you
so discipline that is
discipline
built
yeah
into
that
life.
Is to our daily living, which has come to us by our sages, and that will definitely improve our IQ. I mean, I remember that famous genetist J.B.S. Haldane, who mentioned that the Gayatri Mantra should be inscribed on the doors of every laboratory in the world.
Is it?
Oh. Yeah, that's what he said. I mean, he came to India. He's a genetist from England who came to India, did a lot of research, and this is what finally he concluded. So, I think that is another thing that we can do to quieten the mind. And I think once that mind settles down, and after that, absorption of everything definitely becomes easier. And once you have a positive frame of mind and a mind that is quiet, then I think we have covered great ground. But the other very important thing which comes to my mind is, they take the case of Arjuna. Ultimately, what happened? I mean, even though Arjuna was intimidated, he had Krishna, right? You know, only because he surrendered to Krishna, then things just worked out. You know, even though the army was nothing compared to the opponent's army, he emerged victorious because there was Krishna.
Exactly.
So, even though I have a Kurukshetra battle to fight, even though I have 40 chapters, 50 chapters, and I have less than 5 days, but I think, if I think that, you know, I'm going to do kaise hona hai, how it is going to happen, you know, and you can get stressed, but the only thing you can do is, okay, Swami, you're going to help me, you know, you're going to be with me, and I'm going to take 2 chapters every day, and
you brought out a very important point, Bishu, that the thing is, for Sai devotees, this is a great blessing. You don't need to do any of this rationalization we talked about.
Yeah.
All we need to say is, like, Swami, all these thoughts, all these anxieties, I want to leave it at your feet. Please take care of it. That's all it takes. But the underlying thing is that the mind, its agitation is completely silenced, enabling you to do whatever task is there at hand.
Yes.
Here, as you are giving this example of Arjuna and Krishna being with Arjuna, and that's why his success, we often say that God is everywhere. God is omnipresent. Okay. Then, what is this question or this statement we make that God is with us? Okay, if you see the Kaurava battle, Kaurava and Pandava's battle, Krishna was with the Pandavas. Okay, so if in our day-to-day life situation, if we were to say, Swami, please be with us, please be with us, one thing that really will give us that sense that Swami is with us is if we are following Swami's teachings, if we are obeying his command.
Yes.
Naturally, that confidence
is there.
Comes.
Exactly.
That Swami's. And Swami's, you literally experience Swami in your life.
Absolutely.
And if you are not following 100%,
there is always that suspicion, is he with me? Or
And the sense of separation comes.
Separation.
So it's
comes.
All in our hand. If you are following, yes, Swami is with us. Yes. Swami is always with us. But the feeling that Swami is with us, we get the more and more we follow his
but
message.
But I think what also we should remember is, yes, when you are following Swami's teachings, definitely you feel his presence more.
More and more.
But if sometimes you have faltered, but I think even if you have faltered, I think even at that moment, we should not think that, you know, now Swami is distanced. Because his love is so overpowering that he is not waiting for you to do a good act and you know, make his presence felt in your life.
Right.
I think he is there at every moment to pick us up.
Absolutely, absolutely. And but there is a word of caution here. Swami says, even if you fall 1,000 times, I will come and pick you up. But that doesn't mean that we have to fall 1,000 times.
No, no. But at the same time, even if you have fallen the 100th time, you don't have to feel that, you know, there is no one
left for
me, and God also will not come.
Absolutely.
That is never
said. He will forsake you because of your mistake.
He will never forsake you.
He will never forsake you.
I think even at that moment, you know, even at the 100th time, you surrender and tell, Lord, please, you know, I don't have anyone else. It's only you. I think Swami will not leave you.
Yeah.
But just adding to the word of caution that he said, I remember Swami used to say this. If you err once or twice or even 30 times, that is a mistake.
Yes.
But more than that, I would call it a habit. I remember even the smile on Swami's face as he said that to Anil Kumar sir.
Yes.
Now, coming back to your example of how we have to prepare our mind before we actually, the trigonometry example that you gave, and imagining that 1 hour from now, I have mastered this concept, and how do you feel about it? In fact, that is the power of mind, which I personally, that's the experience I wanted to share. When I was a Vrindavan student, during my undergraduate course, I remember, I was suddenly called by the principal of the campus, Sani sir, Sanjay Sani sir, and I was told that you have to give a talk.
Right.
And the topic they gave me was courage. Okay. So, and it was supposed to be my first public talk in the foyer, in the prayer hall of the Vrindavan campus. So I had 1 week of time to prepare. You know, I used to go and read so many books and I was preparing my material. Until one night before, I realized that I'm not actually prepared.
Okay.
And I remember that because they had already put up on the notice board, K.M. Ganesh, courage and all that. So, I was already my friends. And the one, I remember because it is a tradition and it even continues even till today that, one day before, suppose morning I'm giving a talk, the previous night we have supposed to go and deliver this talk in front of Sani sir.
Okay.
And he'll give his inputs, you know, you have to correct here and there. And then I remember clearly I went to Sani sir's room, I told sir, can we have bhajans tomorrow? Because I'm not at all prepared. I don't have the courage. And the irony will be, I'm talking on courage. And even the thought of giving a talk, see, this is the power of mind. You know, I said, what is it? Mind can be binding. It can also
liberating.
Be liberating. Okay. So till that moment when I told Sani sir, the fact that even the thought of giving a talk is sending shivers through my spine. I could literally feel my legs trembling. Okay. So then Sani sir smiled at me and told, no, there's nothing doing, you have to give a talk. I told, sir, you can see that how nervous I am, okay. And had it been any other topic, I would have given a talk. But because the topic is on courage, okay, I don't want to give a talk. Please, don't put me in such an embarrassing situation or something. Then he gave a very beautiful tip, okay. This is a very powerful tip which I use even till date.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very powerful tip which any public speaker, if he wants, because public speaking is almost like facing a war, okay, for most of us, okay, especially the first time experience, like literally, you know, so he told, the first thing that you have to imagine is, have you ever interacted with a 5-year-old kid? He asked me. I told, yes, I have definitely interacted. Then he told, what do you interact? You basically go and tell them a story or, you know, you just want to talk to them, entertain them. Yes. So imagine that the entire audience that is sitting in front of you are only 5-year-old kids. Just imagine. Okay. And then you are there to narrate a story, to narrate or to give a message to that 5-year-old kid. And you should imagine with what rapt attention the innocent child will be looking at your face, you know. And the good news is, whichever audience you are going addressing, nobody knows, nobody has seen your content, okay. So you only know what you are going to speak. So it is not that you are going to do some mistake and people will laugh or make, that is our self-imagination, that people will look at us, laugh at us and all that. It is because that's what we call, as we grow, we become more and more self-conscious. Okay. So this exactly is what we have to, you know, attack. So as sir told and he told me to speak and all that, then I remember this very clearly. The next day, as I was being introduced, I was sitting in front of the podium and just 2 minutes before I was supposed to go and deliver the talk, I closed my eyes and imagined all my friends, okay, all my classmates, all my seniors, including the teachers, as 5-year-old children, okay, with their water bottle bag. Literally, I had to imagine. And as soon as I imagined, that is the power of thought, because see, subconscious mind, which is there inside all of us, it does not know the difference between the reality or imagination. That is the power of, you know, human imagination.
Absolutely.
Okay. So when I imagined this, immediately I felt so comfortable and a sense of, in fact, I laughed. I laughed. It came naturally as a laugh and I felt so peaceful and I felt I'm going to go and interact with these 5-year-old kids. I still remember when I went up to the podium and when I looked at one of my classmates, naturally a smile came into my face and he also reciprocated in such a beautiful smile. And the entire talk of 15 minutes which I gave, well, it went on so smoothly, so beautifully.
Wow.
So that is the power of, you know, what we say when you're preparing for any event, okay, be it your exam or anything, whatever you imagine, we always have the freedom of imagining what is going to be the output. Nobody has put a bar, okay, as to what you can imagine. There's no limit to our imagination.
Right.
The moment you imagine it, at the subconscious level, it does not know the difference whether it is truth or not, okay. So it has already felt it. And the moment you feel it, you get the confidence, you know, to go ahead and do it. So this is the beauty of, you know, which only the human beings have.
Yes.
Of imagination. No animals can imagine, okay. But only the human beings have this gift and we should use this gift. Exactly. Of imagination.
You can see that this is the basis for so many of the techniques that people use, you know, like visualization is a technique.
Exactly.
Which people use to cope.
Yes.
With such. Or, you know, affirmations, what we talk about. It's basically there's a conversation in your mind which you're trying to replace with another.
Yes.
Yeah.
Talking about public speaking, I remember one of the incident which happened.
Yes, Rajmish.
And it was a personal incident which I faced. And Swami had asked me once that, can you speak in Kulanthal? And I said, Swami, I'm a singer but not a speaker. And then just Swami kept quiet. And next day, many people used to tell me that, see, when Swami says, he'll give the strength and Swami will speak through you. But I didn't have that faith that, and I saw many people, I heard even one speech that one boy started speaking and he said that when heart is full, words are few. And he just ended his speech, Jai Sai Ram. That's it. So I was thinking, oh, okay, what is this kind of speech? And some people added bhajans, Vedam and all those things. And there was no as such speech as such. So one of the student was speaking in the Kulwant Hall and he gave a very beautiful narration about public speaking. And he said that when Swami asks you to speak, think that one, it is like a personal interview with Swami. You're speaking to Swami.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that you're speaking to Swami. Next thing is, he said that it's like you first, next thing is you'll have a physical proximity to Swami, that is second thing. And third thing is, it's a very beautiful thing is, in Kulwanthal, everybody will be facing you. And only Swami and you will be facing them.
Yes.
So, he says, even if the whole world is against you, but if the God is with you,
Swami is with you.
So if you have that feeling, if you just imagine all these things, it becomes so easy about public speaking.
And
so
in my experience, the only person who listens to your talk with complete rapt attention and to every word of what you said was Swami. He would smile for the smallest things that you said, you know, like, it was very beautiful to watch Swami's reactions when other people are speaking. Yeah.
Amazing. I think some of the tips that came out are so profound. And what Ganesh, you shared about the subconscious mind being so powerful. I remember attending a workshop sometime back. It was on these lines, mastering the mind. And I don't remember the exact number, but I remember the trainer saying that, you know, just like this iceberg, where you have 3/4 of the iceberg is inside the water, right?
Or 90%. 6/7 of the iceberg.
6/7. 6/7.
Only 1/7 of the iceberg is seen above water.
So that is how the mind and subconscious mind relationship is.
Right.
Subconscious mind is so tremendously powerful. In fact, I remember the trainer called up one of the participants and he asked that student to stretch his hand. And he told him, say that I'm a girl, I'm a girl, I'm a girl, you know. And when this boy was saying, I am a girl, I am a girl, the trainer tried to push that hand down. And he pushed it easily down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the same thing, when he asked him to do it again, and now he said, say that I am a boy, I am strong. I am a boy, I am strong. I am a boy, I am strong. And you know, the trainer could not push it even half the length to which he was able to push it when the boy said that I am a girl.
Right.
So it is all, in fact, he made us do so many exercises where, you know, he made us imagine that this finger, my index finger is like a rod. Okay, it's like a rod. And I'm not able to move it. It's a rod. And imagine that it's a rod. Imagine that it's so solid. Imagine that it is fixed. Imagine, you know, it was a 5 minutes of narration where he took you to a different world and made you imagine that this index finger is actually a rod.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember at the end of that, after 5 minutes, I was not able to even bend my finger.
Right.
Index finger.
Yeah.
Means that is the power of the subconscious mind.
I think it's very easy to sum all this up in saying like, it's all in the mind.
It's
all in the mind.
But at the same time, I think we also discussed the practical ways of going about it, you know, by quietening the mind. I think that is something that everyone can do. Yeah, we can quieten the mind. And perhaps we didn't get the time, it's already 9:47, so we probably need to close for today and probably continue this discussion if all of you agree. And I really request all of you to please be there next, because it's very interesting conversation and I think we should carry forward all these ideas. This will definitely help so many of our young listeners and parents also could pass it on to their children. But I think what we could not deal with today when we are talking about concentration is how to deal with distractions. And,
yes.
You know, from various media, and that is something perhaps we will touch upon next week. And then we'll move on to the other questions that Hari, you mentioned.
Yeah, in some way we actually touched upon distractions. That
okay.
In the sense that, one part of it, that perhaps, as you said, we'll take it up in detail the next time. But one part of it has to deal with the source of the distraction.
Hmm.
So the source of why we tend to move towards those distractions is the stress that happens because of the other factors that we talked about, like, their ideas about
Once you feel stressed, you won't relax, and then you get distracted.
The brain automatically develops all those thoughts.
Here, I just quickly share one particular incident where one of our brothers he asked Swami, the desire is troubling so much, you know, desire. Then Swami said very simply. Swami said, it is not that the desire troubles you. Desire is somewhere. You go and run behind the desire you catch and you tell, please disturb me. It is not that desire is coming behind us. We are holding on to the desire. Very beautifully. So the good news is you just have to let go.
Yes.
The moment you let go, the desire and the distraction is gone.
Absolutely.
Which probably can be, you know, obviously dealt more elaborately in the next.
Yeah, I think in the next segment we can take up these two questions, like which are very again relevant to students. That in this present age when we have so many sources of distraction around us, like in various media, the internet, etc. How do you maintain that sense of, you know, being on the path, which is relevant even to
the ensure that, you know, you don't lose a large chunk of your life, time and resources in all this.
That's a very important point. Yeah, that and these one more question which was brought up during those sessions was how to deal with negative feelings like anger, primarily anger.
Yes.
How do you deal with such emotions?
We'll do that next week. So listeners, that is something that probably you can look forward to in the next segment of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. The time is running out now. It's 9:50. So it's before I wind up, I would really want to express my deep sense of gratitude to Bhagwan for having made this possible. And of course, thanks to all the participants, Hari, Rajbhushan, Ganesh and Dr. Prashant. Thank you so much for being here. And I request you on behalf of listeners to be here next week also. Probably by next week, the program by the South Canada district would be over. And probably we'll be able to even talk to some of the youth. Probably you would have met some of the youth with whom you have interacted. Some of them are here, part of the Parth Yatra. And listeners, another thing that I would also like to share is, as you listen to this discussion, if there are any questions that come to your mind that you would like us to take up when this panel is here with us on the show, please feel free to write to us at listener@radiosci.org. As always, listener@radiosci.org. We will take up those questions and we'll pray to Bhagwan to guide us
to some way give us some solutions which we can pass it on to you and through you to so many others who would also benefit. So please feel free to send us your questions. And in fact, we would want to make this as a regular feature, you know. Maybe every now and then we should have a program where we take up some of these questions which would help our young brothers and sisters of the Sai family. So dear listeners, that is where probably we will have to pause for now. Thank you so much for being with us. And I started off this session by mentioning about how Bhagwan had mentioned about three important virtues when he mentioned about his life story when he was talking to the Sai youth of Hyderabad. And there Swami had said that I underwent everything because I wanted to teach these noble ideals of patience, acceptance and love. And I think if we see every solution, we will find its a connection to these three important virtues. I think I would leave you to do that exercise and see how so all the solutions so beautifully connect to these important virtues: patience, acceptance and love. And in fact, the other questions that are coming, we will find the relevance of patience, acceptance and love even more as we take up the subsequent questions. So thank you so much for being with us all throughout the day, listening and tuning in to Thursday Live. It's because of you, dear listeners, that the Thursday Live goes on. And every time we have the chance to interact with so many devotees in Prashant Nilayam or elsewhere, we have received very good feedback about the programs that we have on Thursday Live, and it has only inspired us to continue these sessions. So thank you so much. Keep writing to us, and as always, as I told you, please feel free to send your feedback on this program, especially on this program if you have any questions, and also generally you can send us your responses to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you so much, and finally a sweet goodbye and loving Sai Ram from Prashant Nilayam.